Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee.
Heidi from Dixon. That is the Foo, no D. That riff right there. That's the Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters.
Pretty good, right?
Pretty good band.
Stacked Actors, my favorite Foo Fighters song.
There you go. Check it
Foo.
Out.
Foo! Foo Fighters.
Opportunity for you a little bit later. We appreciate your participation on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And we've got a very cool thing that we're beginning this week here on the show that we'll do every Wednesday at 8 o'clock called Draft Outlooks that looks ahead to the NFL Draft coming up, brought to you by Farm Bureau Health Plans and Apple Collision Centers. And we begin today by going to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcoming in Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan. Emory, what's going on, man? Thanks for taking time to join us.
I'm doing fine, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, we've got a chance to look at your work at Football Game Plan, and it's just great. The detail is outstanding. So I encourage our listeners to go and check that out for all things NFL Draft. Emory, I want to start with the most obvious name out there, and that is Trevor Lawrence, obviously widely assumed to be the number one overall pick in this NFL Draft. As you evaluate Trevor Lawrence, as you look and try to forecast what sort of a player he could be in the NFL, what stands out to you about him?
Well, the fact that we've seen him play a lot of games. You know, this guy has started as a true freshman, played in a lot of big games as well. Normally, you go through a college career with a lot of these quarterbacks, they don't really play in big games. I'm talking about championship games, national championship games, conference championships. And we saw Lawrence do that as a freshman. We saw him do it as a sophomore, playing the playoffs, and just this past season, getting to the playoffs again. So we've seen him play a lot of big games. So you have a lot to choose from as far as what you're going to watch. And so he's probably more apt to start in the NFL because he's played in a lot of those pressure-type games. And we know in the NFL, all 16 games are pressure-type games. So he's probably battle-tested and the guy that you could trust to start day one.
So, Emory, a guy who's not as much like that, but it seems like is getting a lot of momentum and based on, I think, a lot of people, you know, watching film. I mean, I know Chris Sims very outspoken about, you know, Zach Wilson and the amazing arm talent he has. What do you think about him? And just how right now would you, I guess, categorize these first-round quarterbacks?
I have Zach Wilson behind Justin Fields because Justin Fields has a, if he played one more season, he would have had a resume very similar to that of Trevor Lawrence. A lot of games, a lot of big games, a lot of you know, impactful games that he's played in and played well in. But Zach Wilson, I was trying to tell folks about Zach Wilson 3 years ago when he starred in that bowl game, the New Mexico Bowl. He went 13-13 and was lighting it up. But then he had the injury the next season. And within those injuries, you saw the game against USC in 2019 where he was just excellent, led those guys to an upset win. So you saw the type of talent and moxie and potential he had. And this year he was able to put it all together behind a very strong offensive line. So he's good. I think, you know, people, I think it's the flavor of the month now, you know, because at one point in time it was Lawrence and Fields, and maybe Fields could overtake Lawrence. And then all of a sudden people just started talking about Zach Wilson to where he threw up into the mix. And then it was, before that, it was Trey Lance. But I would say out of those three quarterbacks, those are the only three I believe I would take in the first round. Lance is one that, you know, it's a riskier pick because he has 1 year of starting experience at the FCS level and in an offense that he really didn't throw the football. So that's a little bit more of a gamble to me than those other three guys. But I would rank them Lawrence, Fields, and then Wilson.
So you don't think Mac Jones is a first-round quarterback?
I don't think he's a first-round quarterback, but that doesn't mean I don't believe he can play. He's my fourth quarterback. I have him actually rated ahead of Trey Lance because when you watch Mac Jones' film, you know, I think here's the thing we see with the issue we see with draft talk and things of that nature. If I say I like Mac Jones, he's a good player, instantly someone would say, well, is he better than Brady? Is he better than Lawrence? Like, what if I just like the fact that the dude can play ball? You can win with guys. Tennessee is winning with a guy right now that's just a good player in Ryan Tannehill. But when you look at Mac Jones and when I poured into his film, the first thing that stood out to me was how consistent the accuracy and the placement was. And that's why you saw these receivers just have monster years because they're able to catch and run without breaking stride because he's hitting them where the ball, he's putting the ball where it needs to be consistently and allowing those guys to be the run after the catch guys that they really are.
Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan on the line with us for our Draft Outlook segment, brought to you by Farm Bureau Health Plans and Apple Collision Centers. And Emory, a lot of chatter right here locally with the Titans, with the receiver position, with Corey Davis and his future up in the air, maybe hitting free agency for the Titans. As you look at this draft and the trend going from college to the NFL, number one, how deep is this class at wide receiver, and how much better and more NFL-ready are receivers starting to be coming from the college game to the NFL game?
You know, that's a good question. I think you're seeing that because you're seeing a lot more passing in college football. I mean, we remember a time where college football was essentially run, pass, punt. And so, you know, now teams are pass first, pass second, and pass third. So these guys are getting a lot of reps out there running routes, a lot of reps versus different types of coverages. And so they're getting that experience, that hands-on experience, and which makes their transition to the NFL a little bit easier. Plus, we're seeing the NFL merge with the college game in terms of schematics. So you're seeing them be more pro-ready. And this is a really good receiver class. I'm always excited about the prospects that I study, because as you dig deeper, you find even more, you know, talent at certain positions. But I do think you can find good starting receivers, whether you want someone that could be in the slot, whether you want someone that could be your bona fide split in or X receiver, or you want a flanker. There's a lot of talent here, and if you need one, you just hope you're at the right spot where the run on the top tier receivers go, so you can grab you one. I would say probably 9 receivers are guys that I would personally take in the first round. So it all depends on when that run starts on receivers, and you hope that you can get one.
I swear I didn't come into this just planning to ask you Alabama questions, Emory, but you, as we talk about receivers, I'm really fascinated by the Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, you know, comparison, because obviously Devontae Smith won the Heisman, should have won the Heisman, incredible player. But I almost wonder if Jalen Waddle has a little bit more upside in the NFL. Am I off base there? What do you think about those two guys in particular?
No, you're not. It's funny because coming into the season, I was on the Raw Sucker podcast, and you know, I told him, I was like, you know, Waddle is the better receiver than Smith. And this was before, you know, Smith had to take over the number one spot, because when you watch Waddle's speed is just on another level. His acceleration and ability to reaccelerate is ridiculous. So he just has legit home run hitting speed. The type of speed that you see from a Tyreek Hill or someone like that is just different. Now, Devontae Smith has good speed. And what I like about Smith was that he was able to round out his game this year in terms of, you know, route running, playing physical through contact, at the catch point, all of those things you want to see a number one do, he was able to do. So that put to bed any questions people had about him weighing 170 to 175 pounds. He's just a really good receiver that just so happens to be slim. So in any one of those guys, you can't go wrong with. I think they play two different positions. I see Smith more as a split in, your X receiver, and I see Waddle as more of your flanker guy, your slot guy, your guy that you want to put on the move and take advantage of his tremendous acceleration and speed.
Emory, lots of conversation out there with the Titans potentially selecting an edge rusher in the first round of the draft. As you look at that position and the edge rushers that could be available in the first round of the draft this year, who are some names that stand out to you?
I would take Joe Tryon right away out of Washington. I think, you know, because of the pandemic and he opted out, people forgot how good he was for the back end of the 2019 season. And when you watch him, you already see the height, the weight, the speed, the explosiveness, the acceleration, all the talent, the physical schools, tools. And then you start to think about a player like Montez Sweat and what that would look like on your defensive line. That's what he reminds me of. So I like Joe Tryon. Ronnie Perkins is a strong power rusher that can help you out on the edge, set a strong edge and get to the quarterback. I think people are sleeping on Carlos Basham out of Wake Forest and Cameron Sample out of Tulane. Sample, to me, plays a lot like Melvin Ingram that played out with the Chargers. He's a shorter guy, but he's a ball of explosiveness, can play anywhere along the front. And Quincy Roche, I think, is another really good one as well out of Miami, who transferred from Temple. I remember being at a Temple game, they were playing South Florida. This is back when Marlon Mack was there, and a lot of scouts were there. I was sitting next to a couple of scouts from the Raiders, and everybody was there watching Marlon Mack and I think one of the offensive linemen for South Florida. But this freshman kept balling, this redshirt freshman that was Quincy Roche. He just kept stealing the show. And so he was someone that people started to keep an eye on, and he transferred, obviously, to Miami. And also, when you go staying in Miami, you think about Jalen Phillips. I think he's outstanding. He's good on both ends of defense, someone that can play with his hand in the dirt or as a stand-up edge guy. So there's no shortage of players, I believe, in this draft that can help Tennessee out up front.
Anyone in terms of, you know, fit that you think might be? Because obviously one guy we've talked about a lot is Azeez Ojulari coming out of that, you know, 3-4 defense with Georgia as a guy who may both fit the Titans but also may be there, you know, at 22. Is there anyone or any type of player you think that might be best for this defense?
I would probably go Tryon because he's a longer, lengthier, athletic edge rusher. When I look at Ojulari, he's really good, and he's probably more along the lines of what you guys already have in a Harold Landry. But if you want someone that's a longer player, athletic player that has the same get-off, same burst, same twitchiness as Ojulari, Tryon gives you a bigger version of that, and a guy that still has upside left in his game. So I would probably lean Tryon more so than Ojulari.
Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Emory, great stuff, man. Lots of good information. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks, Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan, a part of our Draft Outlook segment that we'll do every Wednesday at 8 o'clock leading up to the NFL Draft, brought to you by Farm Bureau Health Plans and by Apple Collision Centers. When we come back, we will continue the discussion on the draft. We'll look ahead to what the Titans should do with the number 22 overall pick. Are we convinced that it's definitely going to be defense that they select with their first-round pick? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. When the Preds have a weekday game this season, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game that night, you will win a prize pack. The next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45 as the Predators take on the Carolina Hurricanes once again. So we'll have that opportunity coming up for you tomorrow. Remember, Matt Duchesne dropping by later this hour at 8:45 for our weekly visit with him. So looking forward to that conversation. But right now, talking some Tennessee Titans football, thanks to Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan for joining us in the last segment. And, Joe, we've just kind of operated under the assumption that defense is going to be the way you go in the first round if you're John Robinson and the Titans, and specifically either on the defensive line or at the edge rushing position. But with some of the picture starting to become a little bit clearer now with Malcolm Butler being cut, and who knows what the future looks like for Corey Davis, certainly I think feasible that he's not a part of this group as they head into the draft. Are we convinced that the Titans are definitely going, number one, defense with their first-round pick, but number two, are we convinced that it's going to address the pass rush in some way, shape, or form? Or are you leaving open the possibility that maybe the Titans go elsewhere with their first-round pick?
Well, I mean, if the Titans sign Shaq Barrett and Roman Aquara here, I'm thinking they're going somewhere else.
Probably so.
The Joe Tryon thing, really interesting, by the way, from, you know, from Emory Hunt there. And TD, Tryon Davenport, was texting me. He had Tryon on talking with TD last week. He had the whole hangout with the Washington players was really cool. And as TD points out, he has met with the Titans virtually. He says loves how they place an emphasis on loving football, and he said he liked Vrabel too. Interesting guy, because by the popular rankings of players, he's not a first round prospect necessarily. Some people have said, you know, the flashes aren't frequent enough. You know, obviously he opted out in 2020. A guy who maybe could have, you know, benefited from, you know, putting more on film this year. Whereas a guy like Jamar Chase, it's like, yeah, he'll go in the top 10.
Yeah, he'd be fine.
We know what you are. Joe Tryon, so could the Titans, you know, a guy like that, if they love a guy like that, you know, could they get him maybe move down or even try to get him in the second round? I threw that at TD. He's like, probably not in the second half of the second round, you know. So, right. And that makes sense. So might have to move around one way or another to get him, but maybe either you can move out of 22 back and get another pick, or You move up. You keep 22 and move up in the second to get him. If a guy, that's the thing. It's like you got to pick obviously who you love, and maybe it leaves open the possibility of spending that first rounder on a corner or a receiver.
Yeah, and it's interesting, and that's why I asked Emory Hunt about the receiver part of this, because I think even if Corey Davis is back, that's going to have to be a position that you address in the draft. Now, if Corey Davis is gone, that's probably a little bit more of a higher priority addressing that position. And you heard Emory Hunt say it in the last segment, 9 guys that he would grade as a first-round talent at the wide receiver position coming up in this draft. So you're talking about a position group that's very deep and continues as the years go by, I think, to get deeper and deeper in terms of guys who go from college football to NFL and are ready to play and contribute right away. So you feel good about that part of it if you're the Titans. The interesting strategy to me is like, all right, if you're talking about some of these upper echelon guys, not guys like Ja'Marr Chase or Devontae Smith or Jaylen Waddle, who won't be there when the Titans are selecting, but when you've got a run on receivers that is starting to take place, how deep does that run go early, maybe in the first round, into the second round? And if you're the Titans, how do you prioritize when to take a receiver on the offensive side of the things if you are going to stick to your guns and go defense with the first round and specifically address the pass rush in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, and what exactly you're looking for in a receiver.
Yeah.
I'm enamored. I've said his name before. I'm enamored with Rondale Moore.
Yes.
Who I don't think, he's going to be there. He's not going to go high in the draft. I just think he could be a fascinating player in this league. And if utilized correctly, kind of a slot guy, but also a sweep guy. Not big, but you're also talking about a tremendous strength to go with his speed and elusiveness. Like, I just think he could end up being a dynamic player in this league and could be there, a little bit later for you. But there's a lot of guys like that. And the thing about the receiving, I mean, Emory touched on it a little bit. And I don't think this is a sort of short window here of lots of good receivers being available. I mean, I just think that's the game now. And you just have a lot. I think you're going to have good receiver drafts, after this too. But still, you look at the collection of talent in this one. You go Chase, Waddle, Devontae Smith, and, I mean, there's a lot of Elijah Moore from Ole Miss is a terrific player. I mean, Kadarius Toney. I mean, LSU, Terrace Marshall is really good.
Rashad Bateman.
LSU, Bateman from Minnesota. I mean, it's loaded. I think, the Titans have got to come away with one of these guys to me, especially, like you said, if Davis is gone. And even if he isn't, imagine being able to sort of upgrade and then have available every week what you had with Humphreys.
Yeah.
To go with Davis or Smith if you can manage to keep one of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's crucial. And to your point, like if I'm Todd Downing right now, I'm kind of staring down the barrel of maybe losing Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis with the pressure that's going to be on him coming into this team and this offense, given how successful they were last year. Like, you've got to hit on wide receiver. And part of that's why I've been so vocal on Corey Davis and how important I think he is to this group, because I've seen the Titans try to draft receivers before. It has not gone well throughout the history of their franchise. I realize there's been more success under John Robinson. And to your point, I think the draft set up more for receivers to come out of college to the NFL and be able to be successful and be able to be productive right away. But that's got to be something that you hit on. And it's interesting now because you've gotten rid of Malcolm Butler, and we still don't know the complete picture of this and what everything's going to look like in free agent. But right now, as the roster stands, you got a pretty big need at wide receiver, which, by the way, we haven't even talked about Khalif Raymond being released later. I mean, this week, I mean, he's gone now. So I get it. Like, he didn't, blow it up last year, but you're still talking about right now, A.J. Brown is here next year. Cam Batson is here next year. That's pretty much it, man. Like, there's not a whole lot in that room after that. So,
yeah,
receiver is a big need. Cornerback could be a need right now. And edge rusher / defensive line as well. And you can't draft everybody in the first two rounds. So,
no doubt.
Very interested to see how they handle this.
Yeah, and I feel bad that we haven't talked about Khalif Raymond. I'm a huge fan of Khalif Raymond.
You are.
As a guy, I wish him well. I hope he finds another spot. And Look, he was a good story for the Titans. I thought he was going to do more this year. I think Cam Batson, like you said, Cam Batson, I think you can count on him.
Yeah.
I think that and Cam Batson is a nice, versatile player who's good at the back end of receiving room. But, yeah, there's a lot of spots to fill in between A.J. Brown and Cam Batson, especially if you lose Corey Davis.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a combination, I think. I think it has to be a combination of draft free agency and maybe a couple lower cost options in free agency.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in and says, I had a bad dream that they drafted a lineman in the first three rounds to replace Isaiah Wilson. What do you think the chances are in the first three rounds the Titans go with an offensive lineman at some point?
I don't think they're high.
I would hope not.
It's just, you know, like what you have to do every year, but probably more this year, is like you have to look at some positions and say, you know what, we can't get injured there. You know, and the bottom line is you had two guys who were forced into action with Lawan out, and they did pretty well. And I think you're rolling with those guys.
Yeah.
And maybe later in the draft you are picking up an offensive lineman. And by the way, we still don't know. As I say this, I'm saying this assuming everything's intact, but there's more guys who are going to be cut too.
Sure.
So maybe that changes it. But as far as we know now, it's a really good offensive line coming back, and especially you bring back your Pro Bowler at left tackle, and you have to – it's like if you move on from Jayon Brown and you're just hoping Rashawn Evans and David Long don't get hurt. I mean, you want depth, but this team is going to be deficient in terms of depth at a few positions.
When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Tennessee Titans. Get your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Everything on the table, including the news from yesterday of the Titans moving on from Malcolm Butler and not franchise tagging Jonnu Smith. We'll react to all of it coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Predator centerman Matt Duchene scheduled to join us at 8:45 for his weekly visit. So looking forward to that conversation coming up in about 13 minutes with Matt Duchene. And speaking of the Predators, some breaking news on that part of things. Dante Fabro will be having a hearing with the NHL Department of Player Safety. The Predators defenseman facing discipline for elbowing Hurricanes forward Brock McGinn last night in the game. So it looks like a suspension will be coming for Dante Fabro. Not surprising based on the play, but that coming out just a few minutes ago.
What's your prediction?
I will say three games.
Three games.
Yeah.
That was rough. That was not
a
good
bad hit.
Yeah.
So I get it, and it's his first time, so that's going to help him in this discussion. Maybe he only gets a game or two, but that's a pretty bad hit. You leave your feet, not a good look.
Yeah, no, that's the type of stuff that could really hurt somebody.
Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Going back to a question brought up by Ryan Porth in The Choice Is Yours, talking about, you know, our favorite bands and our vacation spot that we would go to. Keith texts in and says, something about Robbie at the Wailing Wall listening to Hell's Bells doesn't seem quite right. Probably a good point. I said I would take my vacation to Jerusalem if it was the last one I could take. Tour the Holy Land, be great. And then I named AC/DC.
And listen to your satanic music.
Yes, Hell's Bells out there.
Didn't
say I would be listening to the music while at these places.
Yeah, just in your satanic moments.
Yes.
That reminds me, in ninth grade, I think, my dad took away AC/DC and Wasp.
Ooh.
I had Wasp.
Yes.
I had Wasp tape and AC/DC tape because so he was like, yeah, don't these bands worship the devil?
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know.
Apparently, that was a big thing back in like the 80s. My mom tells me that all the time. She's like, oh, yeah, like devil worshiping used to be a big topic of conversation.
Well, it's like Kiss, which is a band I've always hated, but like, you know, that Knights in Satanic Service?
Yeah.
Is that what it supposedly stands for?
Lots of conspiracy.
I think AC/DC just worships booze, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Great band, though.
Track record would probably support that. Joe, let's revisit our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. And today's question is this. Did the Titans make the right decision in cutting Malcolm Butler over Adoree Jackson? Of course, the news coming out yesterday that the Titans have moved on from Malcolm Butler, freeing up, I think, $10.2 million worth of savings for the Titans. Is that the right number? 10.2?
Yes.
All right.
That is
so right. 10.2 $1 million worth of savings. Did the Titans make the right decision in cutting Malcolm Butler over Adoree Jackson? Almost 200 votes are in. 58% say yes, 42% say no. So I could go either way on this one. I would have probably selected Adoree Jackson to be cut over Malcolm Butler, but right now 58% of people say the Titans made the right decision in choosing Butler over Adoree Jackson.
It's a little higher than I would have guessed. It's just so, I mean, it's one of those things where it can be the right decision, but you hate it.
Right.
And that's, I mean, that's, any Titans fan should feel that way. And I think everybody in the building feels that way too. So, but I would pick yes too, because I just think I'm picking speed, as painful as it is to let go of a guy who's such a terrific player and, you know, guy to have on the practice field, in the locker room, competitively, talking trash to John Harbaugh before a game, you know, whatever the case may be. By the way, did you see the salary cap is official now? According to Adam Schefter, 182.5.
182.5. So
you got an extra 500K, everybody, than some people guessed. So enjoy. Go spend away.
Would have probably been great to have that number officially yesterday when the franchise tag deadline took place, but I would guess that teams had a rough idea that it would be pretty close to that number.
Yeah, I mean, like if it was coming out today like 188 or 178 or something, then it's like, whoa, 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 we might have done something different. But, yeah, this is right around where it's been projected for a while. And, yes, this means – so, again, you're talking 16K less – 16K – 16 million less than a year ago. And that's why a lot of guys who would normally just be under contract and be with their teams are not going to be.
So Porth brought this up earlier, and I've heard Jared bring this up a couple of times too. And to his credit, I think he brought this up shortly after Jadeveon Clowney was signed. Like, do you think that John Robinson and the Titans regret that signing? Obviously, I mean, it's easy to say yes with revisionist history and knowing how it worked out. But Jared and Floyd did talk about at the time maybe some rollover money hurting you the next year with Clowney coming in at $13 million. And Titans fans are talking about that a lot right now with the salary cap restraints that are in place and Clowney not bringing much of anything on the field other than the opinion of Pro Football Focus. Do you think that the Titans regret that Clowney contract? Or as you look back at it, if you're general manager, you just say, look, we were going for it. It didn't work out.
Yeah, hey, we don't know. We don't know that Jadeveon Clowney isn't back here next year.
We don't know that
for sure. I just
hopefully not at $13 million.
I mean, look, I think in a lot of years, exactly what happened with Clowney is going to end up being your biggest regret of an offseason because you spent a whole bunch of money for a little bit back. But, I mean, he's third at best, worst, right, on your list of regrets.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you'd love to have that money, and you'd love to not spend that money. But if I'm John Robinson evaluating my own choices last offseason, I'm thinking more about Isaiah Wilson and Vic Beasley.
Yeah. The Vic Beasley one is just the more time that separates from it, the more it's just like, well, dude, what were y'all looking at there?
Right, because it's what everyone was saying, and you went against the grain. And sometimes going against the grain can pay off, but sure didn't this time. That was one of those believe people. Clowney was just different. I mean, so many other teams wanted to get in on that. It obviously didn't work out. There's going to be somebody out there who says, come on, number one pick,
yeah,
incredible athlete, can wreck a game. Of course I'm going to pay this guy a lot of money. I don't know how much. I can't wait to see what his number is next year. But it's not the same. It's not the same thing. I mean, most – and again, it's not like you're going with public opinion, but I looked at it totally different, those two guys. And then, I mean, your number one is probably just the fact that you spent a first-round pick on Isaiah Wilson.
Getting back into the Malcolm Butler discussion here, the first reaction I had, number one, I was not surprised that Malcolm Butler was a cap casualty. We've talked about it for weeks. Like, as you just crunched the numbers and looked at this roster, you were going to have to get rid of one of the cornerbacks. It was just the reality of the situation. But my initial reaction was, like, if you're John Robinson, you'd better be right about Adoree Jackson, because if Adoree Jackson looks like the Adoree Jackson we saw at the end of last season, this could be a disaster for the Titans. Now, how fair is that to judge Adoree Jackson that way? I don't know. I mean, he was injured the whole year. You're coming back in where everybody else has got, you know, 13, 14 games worth built up into them and are in midseason form getting ready for the playoffs. And he looked lost at times out there last year. Was he still hurt? Was he still playing through something? Probably. We don't know. So I think hopefully with a healthy offseason, he can come back in and look like the Adoree Jackson 2019 next season. But if he doesn't and he struggles, this could be a bad look for John Robinson choosing to move on from Butler over Adoree Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, be interesting to do a list of, you know, individuals in the organization with the most on them, you know? I mean, I guess that always goes to, like, your quarterback, and it goes to Derrick Henry to be great. But, I mean, Adoree Jackson is one of those guys. Shane Bowen is one of those guys. Todd Downing, also one of those guys. But Adoree Jackson, there's a lot on him to rediscover that 2019 form. I mean, I think that what we saw late last year was probably a guy who hadn't played in a long time, who was rusty, who was still a little bit banged up. I'm willing to, you know, give that benefit of the doubt. But when you are making a tough decision like this, it's more difficult because you really have to think, what is he and what is he moving forward? I think he's a good cornerback who in some matchups you have a chance. And if you went the other way, I think there are just some matchups with Butler that it doesn't work out. Now, I mean, Butler matches up better with other guys, but to me, you just have to be faster in this secondary, in this conference to try to win it, and you're still always thinking about Kansas City. Like Butler, for example, if you get into that game again at some point in the postseason, I mean, give me Adoree Jackson 10 times out of 10 over Butler. On a 16-game basis and daily, you know, then I think it's a harder decision. But you have to be faster. And so Fulton and Adoree and then TBD at the third spot.
Maybe Desmond King?
Could be. I'm guessing no.
Probably not.
I'm guessing that they are letting him walk, and I'll be interested to see what the market is for him.
Yeah.
Again, I just think there's a lot of one-year deals coming here.
When we come back, we will switch gears and get back into the Nashville Predators with our weekly visit with Predator centerman Matt Duchene. We'll do that for you next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be joined by Matt Duchene here in just a minute. The Predators with a 3-2 overtime loss to the Carolina Hurricanes last night. They'll take on Carolina again tomorrow night on a road trip. It'll be the third game of an 8-game road trip. And to help us talk a little bit more about the Nashville Predators, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators centerman Matt Duchene, brought to you by Gary Ashton Remax Advantage and by Two Rivers Ford. Matt, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
Hey, not bad. How about yourself?
We are doing wonderful. Matt, first off, just want to wish you well in your recovery. Obviously, we found out over the weekend you're going to be out the next 3 to 5 weeks with an injury. So I guess just for starters, good luck in the recovery, and how are you feeling?
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know what? I'm feeling good. I'm hoping that 3 to 5 is a little heavy on the time frame. I think, you know, there's a chance hopefully it's on the short end of that. So yeah, really bizarre kind of thing there, but I hate watching games. It's so hard to watch games and not be out there, so that part's tough, but I'm feeling good, and like I said, it's hard to watch the guys, and I'm doing whatever I can to get back out there as soon as possible.
And I was going to ask you about that because, I mean, you know this, in the NHL, like, you obviously want to be out there every game, but it is an inevitable part of the business at some point that injuries happen. Like, what is it like from your vantage point watching the game? Obviously, you'd rather be out there, but do you find yourself, like, watching more as a fan? Are you kind of looking tactically at what's going on out there? How do you watch a game when you're not on the ice?
Yeah, a bit of everything. Obviously, fan of the guys, first and foremost, just hoping, you know, the best for our team. And, you know, it obviously start the road trip with 3 out of 4 possible points is a good start. And, I watch little things, you know, just whatever can maybe help me when I get back. I mean, it's a good perspective to have when you're watching games. And you know, whether you're watching certain players or you know, certain situations and you just reflecting for me, I'm just always trying to get better and trying to be the best I can be. So it's if there's an opportunity, you know, there might be one or two plays a night where you see something that you haven't thought about or you know, forgot about or something like that. And, you know, if that's the case, then it's you come out on top, I guess, that night.
On the injury front, Matt, I love asking you the big picture, you know, NHL questions, but I think this league is the least specific about injuries of the, you know, the pro leagues, you know, in this country or in North America. Why is that? Is there a concern about, you know, I guess being targeted if information is more specific?
I think that's probably a, yeah. I think it's one of those sports where, you know, football is really the only other, you know, contact sport, right? So, I think they have rules about that there. I think a big part of that's, you know, I think for fantasy football, to be honest.
Yeah, so yeah. Gambling.
I think that's why they disclose so much on that, because it's such a big business for them. But, you know, for us, yeah, I think it's to protect the guys and, you know, keep guys safe. And so it's kind of funny because, like, when, you know, lower body injury, it's obviously a, you know, something to do with your legs. And if a guy wants to target your legs, I mean, he's got a 50% chance of hitting the right one. you may as well tell everybody what's going on for the most part, I would think. But, you know, it's it makes sense, I guess, on the level of trying to protect the guys. And, you know, because you are going against opponents every night that can have an impact on you physically. So I see it from that vantage point.
Or just say body injury.
Barry Trotz did that one time on the body injury. Go. Predator centerman Matt Duchene on the line with us, brought to you by Gary Ashton Remax Advantage and by Two Rivers Ford. And obviously, Matt, with yourself being out and now Roman being out as well, Ryan Ellis, the injuries have piled up for the Predators and lots of young guys getting some opportunities. We've talked a lot about Ellie Tolvanen here on the show, but just I'm curious from your vantage point, thinking back to when you first broke into the league, what's the biggest challenge of coming in as a young player in the NHL, and what do you kind of have to get used to the most, both on the ice and off the ice?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was 18 when I came in. I came right from high school, right from junior hockey, and so. And it was a way more old school league when I came in. A lot of the old school kind of mentality and guys, and, you know, off the ice, it's really tough. Nowadays it's much easier. Young players are a thing are normal now. Like, it's a normalcy now in our game, where when I came in, it was like, you know, some guys had never even played with a guy that would have been, you know, in his teens or early 20s. So, you know, if that part of it is I think guys do a great job it used to be, or the older guys were a lot harder on the young guys, and now it's not that way. You try and, you know, because it's so normal, you want guys to feel comfortable right away. And then on the ice, I think today's, you know, the difference today is versus, you know, when I broke in, it was more like it was more physical. It was, you know, it was back in the kind of when there was fighters and, you know, big heavy D man that would beat you up in the corners. And, now it's about speed and skill a lot more. And, I think the young guys have a much easier time adjusting just because they're so fast and talented. So, that's why the league went younger. And, you know, that was kind of the result is the speed and skill. So, it's never an easy adjustment to jump in, but it's definitely, I think, more geared towards a young player today than it was kind of when I was young.
Okay, you're talking about veterans being harder on young guys. So what are we talking about here? Are we talking about carrying bags? We're talking about you're buying breakfast, you're buying dinner, or worse than that?
Oh, man, I wish that's what it was. that would have been easy. You know what, and I had a lot of guys be really good to me too. But even, like, you know, I remember going in practice and you know, you do a one-on-one drill and you beat like a kind of an older D-man one-on-one, score a goal or get even a shot on net. And I remember, you know, a couple times, like, I'd go around a guy and end up getting a chance and he'd cross, like, I next thing I know I'm cross-checked into the goalpost, like, head first. you know, shit like that. Sorry to swear, but that's kind of what it's that's what it was. And back then, and you know, it was like I remember being like, what just happened? Like, I've been competitive my whole life, and you know, every day in practice, I you know, want to get better. And it's crazy that that was kind of, you know, if an older guy felt like you got shown up or whatever, that's what happened. So it was it took a long time for me to navigate that and kind of figure that out, how to, you know, try to improve and without rubbing guys the wrong way, you know.
Yeah, it was like a welcome to the league, kid, kind of moment there for sure. Matt Duchesne, Predator Cinnamon on the line with us, brought to you by Gary Ashton, Remax Advantage, and by Two Rivers Ford. So, Matt, I'm curious, just from a simple, you know, looking at the schedule part of this season and how compact everything is, what sort of a grind has this been like physically? Like, injuries, not only with the Predators, but league-wide, are starting to pile up at the moment. Just what's this grind been like with the condensed schedule, basically playing every other night and a lot of back-to-backs along the way as well?
Yeah, it's been a little bit more than normal. I think I think the big thing is going from not playing hockey for so long to all of a sudden, like, you know, I was finding like kind of the mental side of it is as hard as anything, because you're seeing all the same teams all the time. So it's a little, you know, it's not as fresh when you're getting different teams every night. It's a different feel. It's a different, you almost don't know what to expect as much when you're playing the same teams over and over. You kind of know exactly what's coming, and you know, and obviously your mental side and your body are so connected. So sometimes I'm wondering if some of that mental fatigue is maybe trickling in, and guys are, you know, are physically, you know, not feeling as good or whatever. I'm sure everyone's kind of feeling it, especially with canceled games. And, you know, we were supposed to have a break last week, but that Carolina game at the start of the year got canceled, so we had to play it then. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's like stuff like that that's probably hard on a lot of guys. I know Dallas has a really tough schedule coming up with all the games that they had postponed. So, yeah, I think it's probably a mix of everything. It's definitely a different situation for us. And, you know, obviously not being able to even, it sounds funny, but just something simple as not being able to like go out for dinner on the road. I mean, that's something that we look forward to as a group, you know, going out to dinner and together, and we are still, you know, spending time together, but it's just not the same. You know, you're sitting in a hotel conference room rather than like a restaurant with people around, and that's kind of one of the perks of going on the road. It's funny as it sounds. So, and I'm sure you guys know what I mean, just being with the guys and, you know, having some laughs and telling stories and that kind of thing. A lot of that's still going on, but it's different. So, it's a different type season, but, not sure what to make of the injuries. I think it's for us, I think it's just, you know, they always come in bunches. It's always how it is. So you're either all healthy or you're all hurt. It's never in between. It feels like.
Though, Matt, going into the year, we wondered about, you know, this schedule also the way it is. You know, you're playing all the same teams over and over again, whether that would make for, I guess, chippier play at some point. Do you feel like we're starting to see that unfold a little bit more?
I'm not sure. I think there's definitely – I think where it carries over is, like, you know, when a guy does something to, you know, a player on the other team in the prior series, you know, you kind of, all right, like, you know, we got to, you know, send a message next time. So I think that kind of stuff can pile up. But I haven't seen a ton of chippy stuff, you know, what I would consider to be chippy. From our side of things, I don't know if some of the other series around the league have had that. I've kind of just been focusing on our stuff this more than, you know, the rest of the league. But, it's hard to say. I definitely think that there's a chance to get retribution on a guy if you know, he takes a run at somebody or does something, because you're seeing other guys so often. So that'd be the only thing I would, you know, kind of say, but, I haven't noticed a ton of it so far.
Pred Cinnamon, Matt Duchesne has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. Matt, appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. And like we said before, good luck in your recovery. Hope to see you back on the ice as soon as possible, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Matt Duchesne joins us every Wednesday here on Robbie and Rex Road at 8:45, brought to you by Gary Ashton Remax Advantage and by Two Rivers Ford. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Duchesne had to say there and get back into the Titans as well. But first, 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have teamed up to help you continue their tradition with a hockey home gaming party, and it's time to text into the game line at 615-737-1025 for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Home Gate. You can watch a weekend Preds game with a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. Just text the word ICE to 615-737-1025. That's ICE to 615-737-1025. Now to enter, and the winner will be contacted on Thursday. You must be 21 or older to enter. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.